Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening on ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, wherever you are. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. Don't be a hater. 4 stars would qualify as being a hater. We have got a guest in today as we're running this on Thursday. And so I'll tell you the story on this. One day I mind my own business. We were doing the radio show back then. It was one of those days we were off for the baseball playoffs. I got a tweet in my mentions. It's like, yo, where you at? And so I retweeted and was like, hey, here's what's going on in the baseball playoffs. And then somebody sent me a message and was like, you saw who that was, right? And I looked down and it was like, oh, snap. It's Sir Mix-a-Lot. And so we have Sir Mix-a-Lot on today. Like, dude, that was a mind blower for me. I was like, wait a minute, Mix-a-Lot's listening to us on the way home?
Nah, I was like, your show wasn't on TV either. I'm like, well, man, what's up, man? They didn't do something to my boy. Well, yeah, your show was gone, man. They had some replay of some cat talking about something he did back in the 60s. And Chris Berman talking about the old days. I'm like, oh, come on, man.
So you are a big sports fan.
Yeah, I am, man. I am. I threw something down in front of Ice Cube. About this Sonic thing, we'll talk about it in a few minutes. But I think he's starting to realize I might be telling the truth.
Yeah, no, but that's I think because you were being from Seattle and you know growing up when you did, that's like seems to me like an interesting time to be a sports fan because all those teams were kind of new.
Yeah, and they all suck, man. You know, people crack me up when they talk about the Legion of Boom and all that, but I had to go through Jim Zorn and watching Largent play on the field by himself. You know what I mean? It was like Cortez Kennedy getting awards, but we couldn't break 500. But you know, I was still a fan.
But I guess it's also a different fun, though, when you're there from day one, right? Because, you know, all the teams that I rooted for, I kind of inherited because they were there when I got there. But you're there from day one with so many of them.
Day one, yeah. The Seahawks, they're born in like 74, 75. Just a little sprout, though. But that's all right. I was still around for it. So, yeah, it was a long time coming. I remember Chuck Knox got us to the playoffs. And we was running around here like we had a parade. Chuck Knox got us to the playoffs.
But it sounds like you're one of those people that's still mad about the Sonics.
Oh, hella mad. Oh, believe me. And that's why people crack me when they root against OKC. I'm like, how you going to root against them? The players didn't do it. You know, old boy bought the team, man. And, you know, I tour a lot. So I was in Oklahoma City, and I heard Clay Bennett on the radio. And he had these cats on his team talking about congratulations. I'm like, wait a minute. Why are they congratulating him in Oklahoma for buying the Sonics? Well, I found out why.
Yeah, that would be a harsh one to deal with. Like, I don't see what the big deal is.
Yeah, exactly. I'm sitting here listening like, congratulations? I mean, I know they ain't hating on his paper, but come on now. Dude's already a billionaire.
Well, the weird thing to me, though, about the Sonics thing was when it was time to do something with the arena, Seattle was like, nah, y'all can take the team. And then the team got taken and it was like, oh, wait a minute. We want our team back.
Now, you know what? That's the thing. Seattle, the old Seahawk and Sonic fans was fair weather. I'm just being real with you. Now, I don't know where they're coming from because, you know, Seattle got a reputation kind of like San Francisco, a bunch of upscale cats drinking, you know, $4.50 cups of tea. You know, and sit out there cheering and stuff, faking. But now we got, like, pot-belly cats with spray-painted faces. And like, where are these cats coming from? Ain't no more sheet metal workers around here, is it?
Like, it is. Like, that is the one thing. As I looked at that crowd and how loud it gets in Seattle, and I was like, y'all seem like low-key cats to be kicking it like this now.
Yeah, it done changed, man. I don't know. They must bust these dudes in from Pittsburgh somewhere, man. I was like, where they get these cats look like iron workers out here with their face painted? I mean, I sat in the hawk nest one time because I like to get out and play with the folk. And I ain't going to lie. Them white folks had me scared. I'm like, man, I might have to go get back up in this luxury box.
That would be the best thing if you would have told them, sorry, guys, I need to go to the luxury box to get away from you.
Yeah, man, I made up a lie. I told them it was a little chilly for me. But I was like, damn, these cats. It was like the black hole in Oakland, man. I'm like, damn.
Now, how recognizable are you in that setting?
You know what? I didn't think I was that recognizable. I'm one of these modest cats that always think I blend in. You know, I said, I got a gut on me. And I'm like, oh, no, I think I'm just another one of these steel workers out here. But I raised a flag one day. I raised a 12-man flag. You know, I'm thinking, okay, they cheering, but they cheering because the flag's going up. And when I got done, I was finna leave. And the dude said, no, man, turn around and engage. I turned around and started acting crazy. You know, they started cheering. I almost went into an act, but I didn't want to get thrown out of there.
But I guess, you know, every city has their rapper. And for Seattle, that's you.
I guess so. You know, with Macklemore, he performed at somewhere over there on one of them decks. But I'm like, man, if I had to water my show down, nah, I can't do that.
Yeah, and I don't want to be disrespectful, but I mean, every city got their rapper. And for Seattle, is you.
You said that. I didn't.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and I was really curious. There's a lot of things like musically that I've been really curious with you about. You know, I used to do music criticism for a long time, and I feel like with you, Baby Got Back became such a big hit and people like thought so much of it and that's become such a dominant thing. But like for me, when I think of you, I think of Posse on Broadway, and that's like 87, 88, which is really golden era, like foundational type stuff.
Yeah, I think about that all the time, man. I remember, you know, when I first recorded Posse on Broadway, it was like 86. I hadn't released it yet. But, you know, I'm thinking I'm all that, right? I'm like, I'm the man. So then Chuck D called, right? He's trying to put together this weird tour with, like, N.W.A., Public Enemy, Ice-T, Hammer, Mix-A-Lot, Stetsasonic. I'm like, man, none of us sound alike, but that's why he did it. And you talk about getting humble. Whew. I said, ooh-wee, I'm out here with some heaters, man. N.W.A. had a whole street corner on the stage. I'm running around here with a DJ and two dancers. I said, oh, hell no, I got to go back home and rework this, man. There, a lot of people, Baby Got Back was, you know, kind of my biggest hit. And people think it's the only hit, but you're right. I was platinum. I had a platinum album and another gold album before Baby Got Back. A lot of people don't know that.
So what was the rap scene in Seattle, though, in like the mid-80s?
It was pretty different, man, in that we were trying to find ourselves, right? Because obviously, you know, our first exposure to hip-hop was really Rapper's Delight. We didn't know nothing about Kool Herc and all and Bambada and them guys before they put records out. We 3,000 miles away, right? So we got kind of exposed to the New York cats, and then we got exposed to some of the early L.A. like Egyptian Lover. This is before N.W.A., so we really didn't know what we wanted to be. Half the cats had backpacks and hoodies and stuff like that, and the other cats was straight up dressing like they were loked out, you know, Bloods or something. Didn't nobody know what they wanted to do, really, and then we all of a sudden we just started to find ourselves, man. There's some cats up here that can spit. But it's hard to get them out, especially in that era, because you had to be on a major. And I was on an independent, and we was barely trying to, you know, we was just feeding the dogs, not even the kids. You know what I mean?
Well, how'd you manage to make it happen?
Man, it was just starving. I mean, you know, I hate to try to sound like one of them old guys that said I walked to school barefoot in the snow, you know, all that stuff. But it was really just starving. Cats did, you know, I was already poor, so it didn't bother me not to eat for another year, so I was good. You know, we just went without it for a little while, and all of a sudden it started to blow up. And when we started to make money, honestly, we didn't even know what the hell to do with it. Like, what are we supposed to do with this? So we just started making more videos.
Especially looking back and listening to Posse on Broadway, I feel like there's one thing about the music you were making then that really stands out in hip-hop, which is y'all were talking about, like, hanging out with white dudes, right? So, like, you know, you had all these different things coming from these urban areas, but I guess being from Seattle is a different animal, where I'd be like, wait, no, this is, like, as a multicultural an experience of the people around the rappers as you have from anybody.
Yeah, you know, some of the cats was like, you know, my boy Ice-T would come up there and be like, you know, where are we at? I just wanted to be who I was, man. And it was just a song about something I thought only meant something to me and my dudes. And it ended up blowing up.
Well, was there a moment when you realized, like, oh, wait a minute, this is caught on?
I'm going to tell you when, man. We was on tour and we went to Phoenix, Arizona, right? I'm like, tell you, who the hell want to see us? And that seemed like it was another world, although it's right down the street when you think about 1,400 miles driving. We get down to Phoenix, Arizona, man, and we had been playing empty houses, you know. We were going in clubs, man, and it was more us on stage than it was people in the crowd. That's how bad it was at first. And we hit Phoenix, Arizona, man. We played a little spot, held about 1,200 people, and sold out. And I'm looking around like, is somebody, are we opening for somebody? You know, I mean, somebody on this set that we don't know about? And they was there to see us, and they knew every word of Posse on Broadway. You know, and of course, I ain't gonna lie, I started smelling my own gravy, thinking I could cook. Yeah, I started to believe the hype, you know, a little bit. I got humble when I went on that tour with Public Enemy and all that kind of, especially when I seen Rakim, like the GOAT. Whoo! Yeah, that was hard. That was hard to stomach to realize I had to go back home and polish it up a little bit.
Well, it had to be fun though when you were smelling the gravy though. Like before you realized there was something else, that had to be a hell of a lot of fun.
Man, talk about big fish, small pond. Man, I came home. You know, I had no crazy bread, but I had me a little. You know, when I call it a tack-a-lack, one of them tacky Cadillacs.
Yes.
Yeah, I had me a tacky Cadillac with the grill and the phantom top with the wheel in the back, the straps, some little fake rubber thing hanging off the back. I was really trying to be like, you know, a serious hip hop pimp. So that's what I grew up around, a bunch of pimps, you know. We had a pimp game up here. We wasn't no doughboys yet. There were a lot of pimps. But man, I came home and I was a star. I went down to Cali, I wasn't nobody.
You boys on the West Coast, like, that's the thing. Like, between Seattle and L.A. and the Bay, it's just like, man, that's a whole lot of pimping that's going on here. Like, yeah, I didn't know Seattle was kicking it like that, too.
Oh, man, let me tell you, I lived on 19th and Yesler back in the day, right? Back in the day, that was the project. Now it had been gentrified. So I did an interview over there, and I'm trying to put on my hard cape. You know, these white folks from Denmark, man, I said, let me show you my old spot. I went through there, man, these white folks were throwing Frisbees out front. I'm like, what the hell done happened? And they looked at me like, wow, you were pretty rich coming up. But, yeah, 19th of Yesler back then, you had what, like, I sit out there at 12 years old, and it was like watching the movies every Friday night. You know, we'd get a little popcorn and just sit up on the balcony. And more importantly, we was watching things at 12 years old, seeing them girls do that we shouldn't have been looking at.
Because you know? Your mother worked at the jail when you were growing up, right?
Yeah, my mother was a nurse, man, at the jail, at the King County Jail. And she wasn't having that pimping, though. She caught me outside telling my boys, you know how you be lying at 15 years old. Yeah, man, I'm a blah, 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 blah. And my boys is kind of giggling. And I turned around, smack! That my pimping days was over before they started, right there.
Now, what did she think when you started rapping?
She thought I should get a job. You know, back then, you know, I'm an old cat, man. So back then, you know, trade school was your only option as a brother. So she said, you better go down and learn how to weld or something. You ain't going to be doing no rap music. What is rap music? You know, she listening to B.B. King. You know, so she didn't really feel it. And in 1990, I bought her a house. She started feeling it then.
What was the worst job you had to hold down before it blew up?
Ooh, man, I had a couple of them. Three of them. One bad one, man, I used to clean the freeway, man. I used to be one of them brothers out there, look like I had been in jail with the orange vest, and they give you the little pokers, and you'd be picking up potato chip bags.
Right.
You know, and picking up. I did that for a minute. That was, I'm going to show you how old I am. Minimum wage then was, what, $2.35?
Oh, wow.
Yeah, then I came up, man. I came up, started making big money, man. I was fixing pinball machines at an arcade, and I got $5 an hour, and I thought I was rich, you know. And the last job I had before I started making some music was working with this dude named Fred, man. He was demoing buildings, man. We had to go in there and break up toilets. We carrying out old toilets, man. That was when I said, I got to find something else to do, man. Damn.
Well, I'm thinking about fixing the pinball machines. Like, do you have to teach yourself how to do that?
Now, I've been into electronics forever. So it's like when I'm looking at these pinball machines, I'm seeing these little bumpers going out. Part of it was the rubber bands were stretched too much, but a lot of it was just capacitors, resistors, sensors, stuff like that. I told my boy Greg, he's the one that funded a first label for me. I said, man, I could fix those, man. Just let me sit around. I'll get these people change and fix pinball machines. So that's what he did.
Hey, guys, 66% of men lose their hair by age 35. Yes, that would include me. Now, here's the thing. When you start to notice hair loss, it's too late. Easy to keep the hair you've got to replace what you've lost. So you see that hairline starting to moonwalk back a year from now. If it's the same as it's been, how are you going to feel? Do you want that bald spot or do you want to do something about it? Don't go to weird solutions. Use medicine and science. Go to forhims.com. It's a one-stop shop for hair loss, skincare, and other wellness supplements for men. So Hims will connect you with real doctors and with medical-grade solutions to treat your hair loss. They use generic equivalents and name-brand prescriptions to help you keep your hair. It's not like the pills that you get at the gas station or some. These are prescription solutions backed by science. Don't have to go to a waiting room. No awkward visit. Save hours. Go to forhims.com. It's that easy. Answer a few quick questions. The doctor will review you and then can prescribe you. Products are shipped directly to your door, and my listeners get a trial month of Hims for just $5 today right now while supplies last. See website for full details. This will cost you hundreds if you went to the doctor or a pharmacy. Go to forhims.com/Bomani, forhims.com/Bomani, forhims.com/Bomani. Now, everybody talks about starting a record label, but that sounds like it was a novel idea back then.
Yeah, back now, all you got to do is have a Facebook page and a bunch of liars. You know, you can start a label. There ain't no problem, but back then, we had to have a presence, and none of us knew what we were doing. We had one cat with some money, and when he put up that money, they gave me a raggedy van, and I drove all over the United States acting like I was somebody, you know, walking up in places talking about we. Yeah, we're going to be sending you guys some units down here. I just wanted to meet everybody. You know, back then, you had distributors all over the country, so you'd walk in, meet them, shake hands, kiss babies, and tell a whole lot of lies, and it was really a lot of smoke and mirrors. And we delivered. They didn't know that I was Mix-a-Lot, though. I was just a guy talking about I was Mix-a-Lot. That was, you know, Nasty Mix Records. That's all they knew. Like I'm some CEO walking up in there dressed all square, you know. So when the record came out, the record started to hit. It was just a 12-inch single. Then when they seen the art, it's like, wait a minute. That's a dude that was just in here shaking everybody's hand talking about they were going to send us some records. But they thought, you know, they wasn't going to get nothing handled on the business side. We took care of it, man. It was a lot of luck, though.
Yeah, it sounds like, I think Ice-T said that about how you talked to the label. The guy asked him for a demo tape, and he was like, nah, man, it's like selling hand grenades in the alley. Either you believe it or you don't. I can't throw this hand grenade out here. And he said after you got that through, he's like, then we had to go back and make some records.
Yeah, exactly. After you done told him lies, now you got to go back and deliver on it. You know, we told him we had records ready. We didn't have nothing ready. We didn't know how to press records. We had to figure that out. I said, where do we get records pressed at, you know? So we figured out how to press them, and we dropped them first boxes off, and I think we thought we were supposed to get paid when we dropped the boxes off, but they didn't pay us nothing. They had to sell through them things.
That had to be disappointing. Boy, do you think you're about to walk out with a check? And instead, man, no.
We delivered to Big State. I think Big State back then was down in Tennessee. So they serviced the whole Southeast. They had all up in Georgia, Florida. And we gave them like 20,000 records. And they called us up. How many you guys sell? You know, 2 months later, we sold about 200. 200? I said, where you guys service at? And when I found out it was the Southeast, please, I got me a van, drove down, went all through Atlanta, some weird place called Lithonia or whatever. I was staying up in there. I did Augusta, Savannah, went through Florida. And we got them records, so believe that.
And see, that's interesting because, like, a lot of Southern rappers talk about, like, UGK is a great example where they made their mark was doing those little towns, right, where nobody really came through.
Secondary markets, baby. If you fly, I was telling my boy Tretch from Naughty by Nature, he said, man, you're pulling down a lot of bread, cat, because, you know, I make more than most of these cats out here that look big. You know what I mean? I ain't really tripping on trying to look like something. I want to have it. And I was telling him, man, I can go out on a tour. You cats might knock down 35 racks in a show. I might get 20. But when you flying back home, I'm on the way home picking up 10, 15, 10, 15, 10, 15. Then I'm home. You know, and then them guys start doing it. Now these cats be running around renting Sprinters and stuff. Go out there and get it.
Well, was there, like, any show in that early day that just stood out for you? It's just like, yo, man, my life is just something different now.
Yes. Oh, definitely, bro. We were in Panama City, Florida. And back, you know, this is pre-internet, you know, so it wasn't no instant information. It just, you know, you had to wait a week to find out something. So I would, we showed up in Panama City, Florida. We did the sound check, playing at this club that was on the water. White sand. It was nice. You know, we playing this club. We doing good. It was the Baby Got Back tour. We were just rolling the song out. We didn't know what was happening, so we go in there. I still got this on video. I got to find this. But we walked in. Oh, boy, I was videotaping. Oh, boy, that owned the club said, ladies and gentlemen, guess who went number one today? The man with the camera. Mix-a-Lot. I'm like, number one today? I'm looking at my assistant. Her name is Christy. She looked at me. I don't know what the hell he's talking about. I didn't think nothing about it. You know, that sound check. Man, we show up. We look at the hotel next door. And I asked my boy, I said, hey, man, why them white folks standing out on the balcony? Is there a fire in the hotel? I thought it was a fire, you know. And the dude said, no, they're here to see you. I said, why don't they come on in? So I walked in there. Wasn't no room. I said, damn, we doing it like this now? And that was the day I realized, we got to change up, man. I couldn't do normal stuff no more. You know, like go to the mall and try to get at chicks. That wasn't possible no more. I couldn't lie about my name or nothing like that. They knew who I was.
Well, is that good or bad? Because you can't lie about who you are, but you really don't have to say as much as you used to.
Yeah, and back then, you're talking pre-social media, you know, so you could almost get away with, you know, you short of killing somebody, you can get away with anything. You know, now these cats be dry snitching out here, man. I be looking at these cats online, man. Some dude done went up, kicked it with a chick, and next day his naked butt is on all over the internet. I'm like, oh, come on, bro.
This is a totally different game now for people. And you're at an age, I think, look at it with a different perspective.
Yeah, I don't really get some of it. You know, I'm cool, though. I'm not no dinosaur. One thing about me, I keep walking with the people. But at the same time, I'm seeing some of these cats out here now, man. It's like, this stuff you could just charge to the game, but some of the stuff they do it now, that wasn't the game, man. Like I said, these cats are like dry snitching out here, all of them. What's wrong with y'all, man? I heard a rumor you know, I heard a rumor, just a rumor, that Kevin Hart's situation was one of his boys, you know, was going to snitch on him and said he wanted to get paid not to. I'm like, that's one of your boys? You kicking with cats like that?
Hey, man, Kanye had that cousin steal his computer.
Yeah, not cool. See, that's not cool. That's that stuff like on the street, you got no respect. You might as well have went to prison and snitched. Same thing. Man, I'm really lost. I heard a dude do a rap song the other day talking about, I got five chicks, I bought them all diamond rings, I'm pimping. I'm like, ooh-wee, pimp game really switched up.
No, it's a bit different. Let me ask you this. You talk about like the things that cats are doing out here on social media and stuff. It's over now, but what'd you think about that Drake and Pusha T beef?
You know what? It's hard when you're on top, right? And Drake can't win that. This is just my opinion. He can't, even if he straight kill him lyrically, which in my opinion, Pusha T had the edge on that one. Even if he straight killed him, though, he still would have lost because now you're fighting down, right? So you can't really win. Best thing to do, just be big and move on and do some of them tracks when you hitting, but you ain't saying no names. But I think Pusha T, that was a, whew, man, when he started talking about the sun and all that, I said, whoo.
Yeah, Drake got caught out there with a dude who hates him more than he hates the dude back.
Yeah, and not only did he hate him, he knew a lot about him. That's
yes. Crazy.
Ooh, my goodness, man. When he said that one, and then Drake's comeback was, well, you know, I was going to tell everybody about my son on the next album. On the album? Bruh, come on now. Your son ain't a feature that's going to attract buyers, brother. Don't. I just said, oh, Drake, don't say that. Leave this alone. Leave this alone, because I'm a Drake fan. I was like, leave that alone, bruh.
Now, it's interesting to hear you say that you're a Drake fan, because I feel like there's a generational disconnect with Drake for a lot of people. Like, this is a different model of rapper than we had back in the day, and so it could be surprising for a lot of older cats to see him as the dude.
Yeah, you know, and I get where they're coming from, because, you know, we come from an era where, you know, I remember seeing Eric B. and Rakim one time walk into an arena, and I'm standing with some straight G's, all of them shut up. You know what I mean? It's like Rakim is here, you know, bow down, roll out the red carpet. So we was used to cats that not only could spit, but they could whoop your ass doing it. You know, but now it's just a different flavor, man. You just got to go with what it is, man. Cats is, you know, they doing their trap and half mumbling, half spitting, you know, but it's like, you got to get with it.
Did you ever have a hard time getting with it? Because it takes a lot of, it takes some time to adjust. You just get to a moment and be like, hey, man, this is what the game is now.
Not really. I mean, it's one of them things where, you know, you got the old heads that get mad about it. But I fancy myself kind of an observant kind of dude. And the ones you see that's sitting on the outside at the bus stop with the sandy gray stuff growing out of their beard, crying and whining, that's the ones that said, these boys can't rap like we used to. Yeah, them the ones I don't want to be around. So I just learned my lesson to just say, hey, I don't mean I'm going to copy it. But I'm going to understand why it's hitting and be able to lend some flavor to something if I'm producing some of these young cats.
Now, let me ask you, you mentioned the day that Baby Got Back went number one. I actually remember when that went number one. I was like, wait a minute, this went number one on the pop chart? Like, so when you do this song at first, and I know it took a while before it caught on and everything else, but could you have ever imagined that this would be like a number one pop song?
No, because the song, it's funny because now when people talk about the song, they're like, oh yeah, Butch, everybody likes Butch. Not when I did that track. Now, when I did that track, the only time you saw a woman of color on television, other than Claire Huxtable, she was either a prostitute or an overweight maid who was giving advice to the family. That's all you saw, right? So I'm like, you know, it's like everybody ain't good times, you know what I mean? So I wanted to basically put out there, I won't even say an alternative version of Beautiful. I just wanted the black version of Beautiful. We like them Coke bottles. We always have. I go back and listen to Parliament, you know, Motor Booty Affair, all that. We've always loved that. So I just wanted to put that out there. And I ain't going to lie, Luke Skywalker affected me when I toured with him. I seen that. I'm like, Lord have mercy, I got to talk about it.
Oh, you did a Two Live Crew tour.
Oh, don't even get me started on those things I've seen him do on stage.
I mean, feel free. I'd love for you to get started on that, actually. I'm surprised he didn't try to hit you for some royalties on Baby Got Back.
Man, well, you know, it came from all that. It came from seeing that. But I wanted to do something clever. I just didn't want to say, you know, don't stop, get it, get on the flow. And I didn't want to do that. I wanted to basically take a poke at the status quo. You know, that's why I popped at Cosmo and a lot of that stuff. I really wanted to pop at them and kind of let them know, not only Now, this ain't no alternative. This is beauty.
Like, I think the thing I probably missed when it came out was that it, as a statement on the paradigm, because I was like 12 years old when it came out, so it was just booties, and that was enough for me.
Yeah, well, it was more of a statement, and it took what was beautiful about the track, and Rick Rubin kind of predicted this would happen, is he said, by the time they get it, they already bought it. And he wasn't lying, because that's exactly how it happened. By the time they got it, MTV banned Baby Got Back. While it was number one on the charts and the number one most requested video, they banned it. That's because they were sitting in the room somewhere and said, oh, hell no, that's what he's saying? Too late. Message is out.
Now, the little-known fact, I think, on that is you basically own all the rights to it, right?
Yeah, yeah. I'm really adamant about, you know, publishing, licensing, and stuff like that. It's like I saw a lot of brothers that squandered a lot of that, you know, because when you're at your peak, people will walk up and offer you $2-3 million for the rights to a song. And it's tempting, depending on where you're at financially. And thank God I did. I almost did, but I didn't.
Well, how close did you get?
Oh, man, I tell you what, I'm keeping 100. The dude that was going to buy it, he was from Saudi Arabia, right? We were in negotiations to do it, then 9/11 happened.
Oh, wow.
When 9/11 happened, you know, of course, he said, hey, I got to get Ghost. We'll deal with it when I get back. But he took off, you know, 2 years later. He called me. By that time, I was out there making money on licensing. Man, way out, please. I don't need you, bro. I mean, but I got that close, man. I'd be calling you from an apartment building right now if that had happened.
So when did the licensing really pick up on that one?
It really started probably around, I'd say about 98. People started using it for everything, right? But nothing big. And then one of my other songs, this is what's weird about it, Swath hit with the Pussycat Doll song, Don't You?
Right.
So they used Swath, and that was huge. And then that's when the floodgates just opened. Target, we did an ad campaign with Target on Baby Got Back, with Butterfinger, with Charmin, with, man, we all kind of brands. One thing I wanted to do, too, was to make sure, because I know why brands don't license songs, is because it takes too long to get the song delivered. And I have re-record rights in my contract. So what I could do is I could go in and say, okay, what do you guys need? We need a song to do like this. We want this verse out, this verse in, boom, done. You get it in 2 days. You know, and the checks were pretty, pretty solid. So I just kept doing it. And I won't say I'm a master at it now, but I'm very good at knowing what brands want to see and how they want to see it and how quickly they want to see it. The faster you get it to them and you give them what they want, they tell other brands, man, if you want to do that stuff, call Mix. He'll knock it out.
Now, is it just the upfront money that gets people to sell away their publishing? Because it seems like everybody that keeps their publishing wins.
It is upfront money. If you're in a situation, let's keep it 100. Most of these cats, myself included, we get in the game, we ain't never had nothing. We get a big-ass check. Then we go out and buy a bunch of cars, a bunch of dumb stuff, and we forget about them three big letters, I, R, and S. And then they come along and say, hey, you know that couple million you made last year? Yeah, you're on the hook for about 30% of that. I'm like, what? You know, now that's when, you know, Johnny, I'm going to take your publishing calls. And 90% of the cast got to take that money, because if they don't take that money, they might be looking at jail time.
Right.
Yep, and that's where it comes from, man. I'm not trying to knock them, because I almost did it. It just couldn't happen, because if it could have happened, you know, I believe that man upstairs is like, no. We need you to hold on to this. I ain't saying that's why the bomb hit, but I'm saying that was supposed to happen, or wasn't supposed to happen, I should say.
Now, let me ask you this. Coming off of Baby Got Back, do you ever regret doing Put 'Em on the Glass?
Nah, man. See, now, this, I regret one thing about it, how stupid I was that I didn't listen to people, because I did Put 'Em on the Glass because I was pissed off at MTV. So MTV had banned Baby Got Back, and it really was, and Baby Got Back was a clean video. Wasn't nothing in that video dirty, right? So I said, I'm going to do a dirty video and put it on Video Jukebox, because this was before MTV had bought Video Jukebox. And I'm going to let it blow up. I ain't going to put nothing out, no single, no album, no matter. That was the dumbest thing I ever did. Put them on the Glass when number one on Video Jukebox, stayed there almost 2 months. And I had no single. No album, no nothing. I put out the album 6 months later. It was dead on arrival. That was a bad look. I lost some money on that one, but now I don't really regret it because it wasn't really trying to be Baby Got Back. I was trying to be sarcastic, you know. And that didn't work. That didn't work out too well for me.
Yeah, I have to say that I have found in my time whenever I've tried to do something to punish somebody I had a bad business dealing with, I either lost or they ultimately won anyway.
Yeah, and that's pretty much what happened because you know, Rick warned me it was going to happen. He said, you're going to be sorry you did this. Nah, man, I know what I'm doing. Of course, you know, I got paid now. I'm a genius. Yeah, that didn't work out too well, man. I should have listened to the man that knew better. But then MTV put him on the glass. And they bought Video Jukebox. Yeah, we'll put a stop to that airplay right now. Click. It was over with.
Oh, man, you know, when you got to find somebody for a position, it is hard to find the best talent for the job that you have available. And all the different ways that we've tried in different places, different websites we've tried, they hadn't been that effective. But ZipRecruiter, they knew there was a better way, so they built a platform to find the right job candidates for you. ZipRecruiter learns what you're looking for, finds people with the right experience, then invites them to apply for your job. This has revolutionized the way that you find your next hire. 80% of people who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site in just one day. And there's more that ZipRecruiter does. They spotlight the strongest applications you receive so you never miss a great match. Look, there are great candidates out there. ZipRecruiter is the way that you find them. Businesses of all sizes use them for their hiring needs. And right now, my listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/Bomani. That's ZipRecruiter.com/Bomani. ZipRecruiter.com/Bomani. ZipRecruiter, smartest way to hire. Mr. Tim, so what are you up to now?
Doing a little bit of everything, man. I'm doing too much touring. I did a lot of touring this year, man. I lost my mom in January, you know, and I've been like trying to stay close to home to be with her, you know, especially when they have dementia or anything like that. You want to be close. You know, but I lost her in January, and I know how she was. Baby, go get that money. So I went out and did all this tour, and I'm like, it was fun for the first month. You get spoiled when you get old, man.
That's a young man lifestyle, man.
Yeah, and I'm running around doing this stuff, man. I'm all mature. You know, I'm looking at cats, you know, the other groups touring. They eat donuts and licorice. I'm over here. Yeah, I have the sea bass, you know, the Chilean sea bass with a side of spinach. Trying to eat right. These cats are like, man, come on, get some of these donuts, fat boy. Get over here. You know, so it's like another world to me now, man. It's like you think about getting home or you think about it more like a business, really.
You still love performing?
I do once I'm on the stage. I tell people, you ain't paying me to do the show. You paying me to show up. That's what I tell people. You ain't paying me to do the show. That's free.
Now, you still making new music?
Yeah, you know what's funny, man? I got so many new tracks. And you know why I ain't released them, man? Because I fear one thing. Not failure. That don't even faze me. Because that's just the way the rap game is cut. You're going to fail when you put that record. When you're old, unless your name is Jay-Z or Nas. But what I fear is that people might take it like I'm trying to, quote-unquote, remain relevant. And it's a double standard because when Mick Jagger do a record at 70-something years old, it's a good thing. But with hip-hop, you do a record and you're over 40, ooh, oh boy, I must be broke right now. You know what I mean?
Right.
So it's kind of frustrating because I love doing music. I didn't stop. I never had no term limit on loving producing music, but my boys say the hell with it. Just put it out anyway.
I do feel like, though, we've had a good place in the game, though, like where Jay-Z, I feel like his albums now are like those, like, 80s Rolling Stones albums, you know, where you check them out and they still be good, but it doesn't have to be, like, at the height of what's going on. You got cats like Run the Jewels. They might be the best rappers in the game right now at this point, just strictly in terms of rapping.
And got cut. Their beats is sick, man.
Yes.
Sick. Jay-Z is kind of like getting paid for marriage therapy. I'm tripping. These guys are doing songs just like, baby, I'm sorry, I messed up. You know, Becky, whoop-de-whoop, $10 million. Like, wait a minute, man. How come I can't do that? All the times I done messed up in my relationship, I ain't making no money talking about it.
Yeah, you need to marry a woman that we've heard of. Then we might show up.
Let me get on these sit-ups. I'm going to do that.
So you talked about Drake, man. Who else are you into that's out now?
Run the Jewels. I'll be checking that. You know where I hear most of my songs at? No, you're going to laugh, man. I Shazam stuff a lot.
Really?
Right? Like your track, your theme song, that I can't find that nowhere, dude.
Oh, that's my man. That's an original. I can get you up with him.
I need that. That's a cut, bro.
Oh, I got
that's
you
a
there.
Cut right there. Yeah, that's heat, right? I listen to that. I'm like, this got to be like, it sounds like kind of West Coast. But I'm like, I Shazam it, nothing comes up. I'm like, oh, come on, man. You mean Bomani running around with a band now?
Let me tell you, this is a true story. The kid that did that beat, I used to coach him in rec league basketball when he was in high school. This white dude with dreadlocks all the way down to his behind, but he's not faking. Like, he's for real legit. But even with, like, Lion of Judah wristbands and everything else. And then he got into the beats, and I was like, well, I'll always buy beats from you. And so every show I've done, I bought a beat from him.
That beat is tight right there, bro. Yeah, he got a ear on it because, you know, I'd be listening to mixes and stuff like that. Man, every time your radio show would come on, come on, Shazam, give me something.
Nah. Yeah. Now, I'm going to give my man Petey Green, but that's what he calls himself, is Petey Green. I get you in touch with Petey Green.
But the group I'm really digging, and they ain't really getting a lot of shine, is this group called They. Man, they got, whew, Lord have mercy, they got cuts. They got a song called You Right that, once again, heard it on ESPN. It's got like a, man, the beats is just insane with these ones from Aurora, Colorado, and other cats from L.A. Little young kids, man. They got some heaters, man, but for some reason they can't get over that hump yet. Tech N9ne, I'm always going to love Tech N9ne.
Man, have you listened to that J-Rock? I listened to that yesterday or this morning. I was like, oh, okay, I didn't know we still made rappers like these.
Yeah, they got some cats out here, especially if you get out with Tech on a track like Snow the Prophet, whew, ooh, they talking about these chicks out here spitting. Yeah, now, they don't want no part of Snow the Prophet. That girl is, ooh, goodness.
Yo, Tech is kind of living the dream because I'm familiar with Tech and know his music. Tech could walk in here right now and I wouldn't know who he was, and I don't mean that in a bad way, you know?
Because he can stay off the grid enough to stay popular forever. I know that sounds weird, but Tech N9ne is when the business changed and the major labels lost all their power. Tech, that was made for Tech N9ne. He was already independent. So he hit the ground running, man. That guy's making, whew. I think he was in Forbes. He was number four, top grossing rap artist. I'm like, damn. Are you number four? You got Birdman, you got Drake, you got Jay-Z, you got Diddy. How he number four? That don't even make sense, really, when I think about it.
Dude, when I saw him with those season tickets in Kansas City during the World Series posted up next to E-40, and I was like, oh, okay, he's playing a different game here.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, Tech, 40 is another one, man. I dealt with 40 on some business a couple times. Yeah, 40 got his game. You be thinking that stuff is rehearsed. I done tested him, man. I done got him on the phone, bring up a subject. He started dropping that sauce all over the meat. I'm like, woo, this boy's a street game. That's real. I mean, I know he ain't caught no blows because his game's too tight.
Well, it's like Bug B had a great line about him. He's like, yo, you can't out-rap E-40. He's like, no matter what track you're going to wind on with E-40, you can't out-rap E-40.
No, because he, you know, all that shizzle, all that stuff came from him and Short on that one track. It was all the Fasheezy, and then it went to Shizzle when Snoop got it. But, yeah, that cat, I would love for E-40 just to sit in my studio. I'd give me one of them old Walkman cassettes when he's talking and just record it. That's how you. That, if you could steal something from 40 and put it out, you'd get rich. Just steal a conversation.
I have enjoyed this greatly. Like this has been what's up, man. I really appreciate you joining us here. You got anything you want to tell the folks to look out for?
Yeah, I'm gonna tell the folks right here. Look out for Bomani Jones taking over. I'm telling you, man. You see, man. I'm telling you, man. I see some of these cats. Like I ain't gonna say no names. Some of these other brothers be on ESPN and they be like, sounding like square cats trying to be cool. You know, you can tell they was pampered a little bit. You know, like, yeah, you know, I'm sick with it. Let's get busy. No. Bojo, man, y'all better watch. Bomani Jones will be the staple at ESPN within 4 to 5 years, guaranteed.
Hey, man, I greatly appreciate that. I appreciate you joining us here, man. We got to do this again, though, because this has been, like, I feel like we had so much more we could have gotten to that this has just been an amazing one.
Oh, I mean, anytime. Oh, I got to ask you, though. Where you think your boy LeBron's going?
Dude, I think L.A. I've been here in L.A. for so long that I think he goes to L.A. The only thing I know is he ain't staying in Cleveland.
Yeah, I think he go to L.A. with Paul George, but I think he should go to Houston. It's my opinion.
I, But I can see that. I'm not going to lie to you. I'm from Houston, right? Like, that's my city. I know it. But, man, if I was LeBron and I got the chance to go live in L.A. and be LeBron, I'm going to L.A. Like, forget about anything basketball related. I wouldn't care if the Lakers won 15 games last year. I'd love to be the best player on the Lakers.
And plus, he got, if I'm not mistaken, he got a $32 million mansion out there, right?
Yes.
Yeah, that might be a good enough reason.
Can you imagine your $32 million house being, like, just one of them?
And he's renovating it. Well, how do you renovate a $32 million, unless it's a castle somewhere you want to, for historical reasons, how do you renovate a $32? I know it ain't raggedy.
Oh. Like, what bathtub do you need to put in, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you know, when I took a dump in here, I couldn't get the air out fast enough. Can you rip off the ceiling? Come on, Brian.
But you know what that is, though? But I keep going on this point. I think it's something that I noticed when I lived in Miami, and I imagine it's something you noticed when you were coming up. Every bit of money that you get puts you around people to let you know how much money you don't have.
I got a good friend. I don't want to say his name because he's a private cat, right? We was in Disneyland. You know, we all kicking it. We down there doing a car thing because I'm a big car guy. I have my Lambo down there. I have my Ferrari down there. We driving. So I knew this cat had money, but I was standing behind him at the ATM. You know, and we getting a little flush money, playing around. He pulled out $300 or $400, and then he pulled out the little ticket with the balance on it. And I knew I was broke because I had to stop and count the commas. I said, oh, wait a minute. No, that's two, three. Ooh, he's in billion range. You know what I mean? And that was his play money. Yeah, $3 or $4 billion. Just sit. I said, damn. And then I realized, like you said, and then I guess what I started doing? Remodeling my house.
Dude, I tell this story all the time. When I lived in Miami, I lived on Collins, and I lived across the water from, like, the mansion. So, like, the backside of the mansions would face, you know, people have boats. And so this cat, man, he had this boat, and his boat was so clean. Like, I'd look out the window in the morning and be like, man, look at that boat. And when he looked out at his boat every day, you know what he was doing? He was looking across the way and looking at the man across the way just all over his boat, because that dude's boat was so much crazier than his boat. And you know that meant that one day he was gonna have to go get another boat to take that boat in some other water, to only find out that his boat wasn't holding up to theirs.
Yeah, you know what though, at some point, the one good thing about getting older is you stop that race. You realize, hey, you know what, you start looking back and you go, I ain't doing that bad, because brother over there, look at that shit riding in.
You got to get the unique ride. Like, forget about trying to get the flyest. You can't win. You got to be the one. Yeah, you ain't even got that yet, do you?
Yeah, I got a boy out here, you know, I ain't going to put his name out there, but he in the business a little bit, make a little money. And I noticed when he came by my house, he got the big Hummer with the stupid wheels on it and crazy seats. And I said, oh, yeah, he ain't got a lot of paper. He just wanted to make that announcement when he pull up, like, oh, I could have flipped that, but I really didn't want it.
I got the Hummer.
I was like, yeah, okay.
I suggest that the way you do that is through your watch. An understated watch. Yeah. That does the job.
Yeah, I got to get my watch game up, because I had a little Bell and Ross on. I'm trying to do it kind of understated, right? Ice Cube come up to the radio station. I got a radio show I do sometimes. I'm looking at that Hublot, and I put my left hand down, bro. I put it behind my back. I'm in here with a $40,000 Hublot on, man. Damn, bro.
I have one more story there. I've told this story before, but people still enjoy it. So, like, after like, I got a decent check, right, I decided to do something for myself. I went to the Rolex store to get a watch. So, of course, you know, I walk in, and the man doesn't think I belong here. So,
So
I walk in, and he pushes me off to some very kind lady, and she starts talking to me, and I see a watch, and I'm like, oh, okay, let me check out that watch, right? And she shows it to me, and it's so dope. And I remember she says, well, this watch only comes in the platinum. And I'm like, oh, okay, platinum, that sounds cool. And I said, how much does it cost? She goes, this is $84,000. And I'm like, okay, so how do I move over to these other watches, but not so fast that it looks like it's a problem? But I need to get off this $84,000 watch pronto.
How do I look at this lady and say, you know, I never really liked platinum, no way.
Yeah. I remember she said that. I was like, oh, okay, that's good to know. Well, tell me about this.
Yeah.
And
I eventually got
one. But I mean, I got one that day. But that 84, man, I was like, nah, man, I can't. I'll never buy another watch. I'm wearing this every day if I spend $84,000 on it.
Yeah, $84,000. I'm walking up in here, up in ESPN with a watch on and no draws.
$84,000. I'm hooping it. I'm sorry. I just couldn't imagine, like, how well can you tell time? And the thing is, Ice Cube will look at that and be like, I'll take two.
Yeah. Hey, man, my boy God just telling you about, right? He's one of these he had a watch on. It looked like, to me, it looked like a Timex. I'm like, look at this. I'm flashing my little stuff around. I had a little, I got a little Rolex, a president, but I had a super president with all them diamonds. I said, nah, this will get you killed. I took that thing and stole it, got three watches. But Greg got this watch, looked like a Timex. Brown leather band, gold handles, black background. That's it. No diamonds, no nothing. $350,000. I said, what is it? I couldn't even pronounce the name. I know it started with some kind of P with a bunch of Z's and T's in it. And I said, damn. He's, oh, yeah, this one was done in 1949. It's built by a watchmaker out of Brazil. I'm like, oh, my God. So he had a store. He had a book with his watch.
The 1949 model.
Yeah, 1949, and he said, sometimes it doesn't work, but that's okay. It doesn't matter. $350,000? I'm like, yeah, $50,000, man. I could pay my house off for $600.
And actually, the fact that it doesn't work sometimes matters a lot. I think that matters a great deal at $350,000.
Yeah. Yeah. I was like, and you know, my dumb some of you got a battery in there? You know the N-word was right on the end of his tongue.
Hey, man, like, I mean, it's a fair question to ask. Like, so where do I go to get the battery replaced?
Yeah, what you got in here? One of them little biscuit batteries, little 2043 or whatever they call them? No, he said, no battery. You wind it up. He said, so I get the movements. They call them movements. We call them hands. I get the movements cleaned once every 3 years. I said, oh, okay.
We all learn something new every day, man. That is Sir Mix-a-Lot. But, man, thanks so much for giving us the time, man. I appreciate it.
Anytime, boss.
All right. Thanks so much for listening to The Right Time. Thanks to Sir Mix-a-Lot for joining us. Also, you want to go to the 2018 ESPYs. How about going as the guest of this year's host, Danica Patrick? Make a donation to the V Foundation for Cancer Research, and you could win a VIP ESPYs trip and the chance to meet Danica Patrick at a rehearsal before the show. Go to ebay.com/ESPN to donate for your chance to win. For official rules, go to ebay.com/ESPN. Also, don't forget The Right Time Book Club. Tweet about it with the hashtag The Right Time Book Club. We're reading Friday Night Lights by Buzz Bissinger. We're doing 4 chapters per month. Dominique Foxworth will be on with us next week to talk about the book, so check that out. Also, tweet us your questions about the book and your screenshots of your favorite passages. And, of course, rate us, review us. We like 5 stars. 4 stars, don't be a hater. Go ahead and give us 5 stars. We'll talk to you guys again next week. Oh, I forgot. Shout out to my man Gabe Bassane for handling everything behind the scenes. I got you, Gabe. I wouldn't forgot you.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.
The Right Time with Bomani Jones is presented by Goodyear. Drive always discovers possibilities. Goodyear, more driven.